We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Mark Reardon Show, ladies and gentlemen, on kind of a gloomy, cloudy day, and you heard the forecast from Carol there. One more hot day, and then I think we get relief. It's hard to believe, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that summer is coming to a close. And we've kind of survived in one way, shape, or form, kind of survived, maybe not, some of us, some of you, the last 6 months, and how long do we have to go? You know, I'm going to check in with our friend Linda Garofano in Italy today. Linda's been with us, I think, three previous times, at least twice, once in March, and then we checked in with her in June. Maybe it only has been twice. She's a tour director in Rome. We hooked up with her in the early stages, even before we started to shut down. Might have been the end of February, beginning of March, I touched base with her. So maybe we've had her on a few times. And, you know, you're seeing a spike now in cases in Europe, in Italy, in Spain. So we're going to touch base on that. We'll get some new numbers from Dr. Garza and the task force this afternoon. We're going to find out how to get season tickets for St. Louis City SC. That's all coming up. And Mun Choi, the president and the chancellor at Mizzou. He's the president of the system, also the chancellor at the University of Missouri in Columbia, is going to join us in just a couple minutes. Let me give you a small example of how some of this stuff sort of gets out of control in the media with the coronavirus. This is an actual headline in the Washington Post in a story. I put this on Twitter earlier today. First COVID-19 death linked to Sturgis motorcycle rally reported in Minnesota. The case involving a biker in his 60s is one of at least 260 infections traced to the event last month, where many declined to wear masks. So you got 400,000 people, an estimated 400,000 people, bikers, that went to South Dakota, and one person died. That's newsworthy? How in even 260 infections, who cares? Out of four, I'm not good at math. I can do the math. Out of 400,000 people, and they can't certainly be sure that that's where he caught it. He could have caught it anywhere if he was riding his motorcycle. And by the way, is there anyone out there listening right now, when you hear 400,000 motorcycle riders, what are the chances that, well, first of all, somebody brought this up, what are the chances the guy died of an accident and he was listed to COVID? I'll accept that as a possibility. I'm not a conspiracy theorist on these numbers, but look, there have been some funny things that have happened throughout this. But the more, I think, pressing question would be, how many of the 400,000 Harley riders and others, mainly Harley, I took part in a lot of Harley anniversary parties up in Milwaukee, which were a blast, by the way. And I mean, Jack Clark used to come up there. You used to see all kinds of people. But there's probably been, let's just say, 3 out of 400,000 people have died from motorcycle accidents. Wouldn't you think a couple out of 400,000? I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems just as likely that one person would have died from a motorcycle accident as from the coronavirus. And they did a complete story on this in the Washington Post, talking about the infections and Sturgis. You know what? Here's my question. Here's what I'd like to find out about. The schools have been open here in St. Louis now for a couple of weeks, the private schools. Where's We're the nuns tipping over in the hallway right now from the coronavirus. Now, in fairness, there are some schools, private schools, Catholic schools in particular, dealing with some outbreaks right now. I've heard about them. I don't know what the protocol is. I don't know what the response is going to be. But still a lot of questions about all that stuff. We'll try to get some of them answered here this afternoon. We are going to talk to Dr. Choi from Columbia this afternoon on the University of Missouri system and just really what's happening in Columbia. We'll talk about racism and some of those other things as well as we get through here this afternoon.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
Well, of course, I have strong ties to Columbia, Missouri. I went to Mizzou. My sons went to Mizzou. One of them still goes to Mizzou. Many friends there. And I've been looking forward to having a chat with Dr. Monchoy for a while. He's the president of the University of Missouri system, also the chancellor, I believe, at Mizzou. We'll clear that up here in a second. Dr. Monchoy, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on. I don't think we've ever spoken before, so
no,
I know we've been trying
a lot
to do this for a while. Uh-oh, yeah.
That's
I spent, I spent many years in Columbia. I wasn't going to school the whole time. I graduated in 3.5 years, but I spent from 86 to 96 in Columbia working in radio, and all of my really dear friends are there in Columbia, and I mentioned my son is there as well. So strong ties to Columbia. First and foremost, clear up the question on the title right now. You're system president, but also chancellor at Mizzou. Is that chancellor aspect still a temporary title or not?
No, that's a permanent title, and so I oversee all four universities, and we have a good collaborative relationships with all four campuses. But here at Mizzou, I'm going to be focused also on the academics, research, and engagement programs. So that's why the title is both president of the system, but also chancellor of the campus.
How are things on campus right now when it comes to the coronavirus and in-person classes? I'll be honest with you. It's hard for me to get a response from my son, who's 20 years old and a junior now at Mizzou. So I ask him, hey, are some of your classes in person? I get some answers, but you know how these young people are. So what's the balance like right now versus virtual?
Yeah, the balance is about 65-35, and 65 is a combination of face-to-face courses, so let's say like small laboratories in biology. They're broken down into small classes of less than 20, and we also have what's called blended classes, classes in which the large lectures are delivered through e-learning, but the discussion sessions are held face-to-face with much smaller, let's say 20 or less. And so that's the comprises 65%, and 35% is online courses. And students have made up their schedule, and they decide which class they want to attend in person and which class they want to take online. So as much as possible, we try to accommodate that. And we're still working through some schedules of students that want to have more of the face-to-face at part of their education. So we're still working through that, but we have been very accommodating to our students, and they've been very patient.
What's it like, you know, and I don't have a handle on what's going on in Boone County or in Columbia proper with COVID. I know you have, maybe you can explain a little bit about the COVID-19 dashboard that you have, keeping track of cases. We've been in classes on campus now for a couple of weeks, and, you know, I guess in student housing, my son's not in student housing, but what are we seeing? Is there a pattern that's emerging when it comes to COVID or not?
Well, there had been an upsurge of cases beginning last week, but that was not, it was expected. When we looked at the numbers at other universities that began prior to our start of the classes, they saw anywhere from 0.5% to about 1.5% of the student body being infected. And so it was not unexpected, but we're also making sure that we are treating those students with the approach of having them have the isolation space should they need it, or quarantining space, and also getting the support, medical support, if they need it. And the really important part of all of this is that we want to keep the campus safe for everyone. And while the students at that age group do recover at a very high rate, we want to make sure that the transmission to the older age groups in our community is kept to a minimum. You know, there are always risks that we take in getting up and going to work every day, but if we use the CDC guidelines of masking, which is required in all inside buildings, as well as social distancing, the transmission in those environments are going to be very, very low. And we just need to make sure that everyone follows those protocols to keep the community safe.
So we know we're all in new territory here for the past 6 months and beyond. But you've been asked this question before. I'm sure it's going to continue. A lot of parents who would say, look, I'm writing a big check, or my student's taking out a loan. Should I be paying this much for tuition for a good portion of virtual classes? So what's your response to that question? Again, I think there's an appreciation for how we all have to adjust right now, but it's still a legitimate question.
It is, and we get that question asked all the time. And my answer is, no matter what platform we use for teaching our students and whatever platform the students use to learn from our faculty members, it is of the highest quality. And so whether it's online or face-to-face, we ensure that we have the same standards of engagement so that students get the best experiences. Now, in some cases, our students have decided that they are going to take all of the classes online, even though they are here physically in Columbia. And so that goes to show the quality of our programs. And at the same time, at running an operation with a $3.2 billion revenue each year, we have to be mindful of the business practices. All of our faculty members that are teaching the courses, whether it's online or face-to-face, are being supported. They're getting paid. And the staff members that support the teaching, research, and engagement also are doing their work. In many cases, Mark, what we have is faculty member who is started out doing face-to-face classes. But let's say one or two students tested positive and they're no longer attending the class. The option is provided for that student to take their class online while they are isolating. So faculty members in many cases are doing double duty, doing the traditional face-to-face, but also the online version. And I'm really very proud of our faculty and staff and for our students for being patient and also being resilient through this process.
I will tell you that my son spent a fair amount of time in my house back in the spring, you know, when he was wrapping up the semester. And I was surprised, and he was even surprised, I think, at the level, you know, the intensity, the requirements that were still there for the virtual work. Now, a couple of weeks ago on this show, and you know, I'm a big fan of the university. I have, love and affection, and I really care. But when things happen that I don't like, I tend to tee off on Mizzou a little bit. We had the situation with Joe Poor, who's a professor under investigation for this comment he made on the Zoom call. And a lot of us felt like, look, this was very innocuous. It seemed like a bad dad joke. Is he still employed by the university? There were some questions about that. And what was the decision on Professor Poor?
Yes, and he is still employed, and I believe everyone deserves due process, and that's key, and that is key. I mean, that's part of the American system. And to the original part of your question, he was not removed from teaching because of that video. The video, though, informed the senior leaders to meet and discuss to learn more about what happened in the video. It got a lot of media attention, social media attention. So when we decided to meet, after that meeting, we learned that there had been some other instances of very inappropriate comments made by Professor Poor. But we didn't make a rash decision and say, this is what the sanction is going to be. We said, we have a process that has an investigation that occurs. As part of the investigation, due process is provided. After that investigation is concluded, we will get the findings and then determine what the final sanctions may be. But we don't know. It could range from no sanctions, or it could extend to dismissal. But without seeing the investigation, it's inappropriate for me to make a guess.
Absolutely. And that's a fair answer. And look, I check with the official member of the Board of Curators for the Mark Reardon Show, Dr. Choi, is David Steelman. He also assured me of some of the things that you're saying and that there were some other factors involved. So that's fair enough. How important, Dr. Choi, is football this fall, because if there's no football, there's not a lot of revenue for the athletic department. That affects right. all the other sports. My heart really, really goes out to these kids who have been out there really trying to not only get a higher education at institutions like Mizzou, but training in different athletic endeavors, and now maybe being a sophomore or a junior and senior in high school and maybe not knowing if those programs are going to be there. So talk about football. I know a lot of people are going to say, look, football doesn't matter. We're here to educate kids. But it is a part of the experience, and it's a part of the dynamic right now.
Well, it's part of the American experience. I mean, what is a fall without football? What would Friday night be in Columbia, Missouri without football? And the football teams in Columbia are playing. They began playing last Friday. And we are planning to play on the 26th. And I have a lot of confidence in our staff working with the SEC to make sure that that can be a very safe playing opportunity for our student athletes. And also the input from the student athletes who are toiling day in, day out, not only going to classes, doing the homework, but also practicing the amount of time that they practice, their voice also matters. And we are getting just strong support. Coach Shrink is getting strong support from the players saying, let's play in a safe way. And that's what we plan to do. But if there comes a point where the health and safety of our student athletes, faculty and staff are on the line, then we will make the right decision for their health and safety. But I would love to see football. I miss it. And I can't wait until the tide comes rolling in and hopefully whimpers out at the end of the game.
Did I hear correctly that, you know, and I was looking forward, I was going to ride in the car, my daughter was going to ride in the car with the Attorney General Eric Schmidt for the homecoming parade, but I think homecoming has all kind of been, the kibosh has been put on that, right?
Yeah, and part of the reason is that we always have to prepare for the unknowns. And scheduling that out, which is going to be sometime in October, we do want people to make air travel reservations and hotel reservations and then disappoint them. And that's where we are now. But I know that our team is going to work on some very innovative ways for us to celebrate, but in a safe way.
Yeah. The big losers there, the dentists of Columbia, because all the candy, you know, the kids aren't going to have the candy. Yeah, then you got that. The dentists are going to be the big loser, Dr. Choi. I think that's what's going to happen. All right, one final question here before it, because I know you're a busy man. But obviously, racism has been a big part of the conversation nationally for the past, well, several years.
Of course.
And then also this summer. Now, I would like to advocate, and I do on this show on a regular basis, the, you know, addressing some of these real issues, but then kind of taking a step back from some of what I would call the kookiness, like the removal of the Thomas Jefferson statue at Mizzou. Now, you got a group out there with the hashtag Still Concerned and Black at Mizzou that have been calling for your resignation, some other things. Some of their demands are not unreasonable. They want to honor Dr. Gus Ridgel, who was the first African-American, I think, graduate. He also played a big role in, you know, desegregating Mizzou. That seems like a reasonable request. I was unaware of Dr. Ridgel, so that doesn't seem to be a bad thing. But when it comes to the more, I guess I would say, a little bit more extreme requests, like the removal of the Jefferson statue, what's the position of the university and the chancellor and the president of the university right now on that?
Of course, and wow, wide-ranging answers to that comprehensive question. With regards to the Thomas Jefferson statue, our decision is for the statue to remain, but we've also charged the task force to contextualize Thomas Jefferson and look at the man through a complete 360 lens. And we all know of Thomas Jefferson as a man with inspirational principles that led to the Declaration of Independence, that led to the founding of this great country. But we also know that he was flawed, that he was a slaveholder, that he had relationships with his one of his slaves, Sally Hemings. And so we want to be able to use a university where people's minds are expanded, where they can explore and really hold someone like Thomas Jefferson as a man who did great things, but also as a flawed man that needs to be part of our understanding of that complex person. One other thing, when my job as president and chancellor, I consider it to be a great honor. And what happens to me is really decided only by the Board of Curators. But I will not resign. I have a great deal that I want to accomplish for the faculty, students, and staff, and that's my commitment. Unless I lose that commitment, if I lose that commitment, then I should be the first to say I'm going to resign. But I care deeply about this university and the state, and I'm going to continue to do the right things.
Yeah, I care deeply as well, and that we share. Dr. Choi, thanks. So you're good at this. You know, you're very diplomatic. I would not make a good system president or chancellor because I would shoot my mouth off for a variety of reasons. There's a reason I'm in radio, because I'm not that smart in other areas. But look, it's great to finally connect. You're welcome back here on KMOX at any time. You have a big advocate for the University of Missouri system and, of course, Missouri. So M-I-Z, Dr. Choi, thanks for coming on.
Z-O-U. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
2:30 at the Voices of St. Louis. We'll get to the news. We're coming back with much more this afternoon. I have some really interesting audio from Chris Cuomo talking to Michael Cohen. What is that all about? It's kind of weird. We'll get to it next.
Ready for the Cards and Reds tonight. Ameren Total Access 445. First pitch 540. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
Yeah, last night the Cardinals put, what was it, 2 touchdowns and a safety up on the Reds. That was a great start. Great start. Actually, the last couple of nights, big starts. Tried to give it away 2 nights ago, going for the sweep here of the Reds tonight, which would be nice. No baseball tomorrow. We've got a bunch of doubleheaders next week. I think 3 days we will have no show. Monday, of course, is the holiday, but there's baseball from Chicago that afternoon. So I'm going to play something here that I just kind of think is interesting, and it's kind of weird, and I don't know. I guess I don't know exactly why this is important. However, you know, I'll tell you, just being a broadcaster, there are rivalries, and people go back and forth. And, of course, Fox and CNN don't get along. And Tucker Carlson and Chris Cuomo, they take shots at each other all the time. So there's this piece of audio here. And this is actually from a conversation that took place with Chris Cuomo and Michael Cohen, the president's former lawyer. It's from a couple of years ago. And the reason, I guess there is one reason this is important. I'll explain after the audio, because for the most part, it's just sort of fascinating, and that's one of the reasons that I like it. And the other thing about this is Michael Cohen claims that the only people that had the recordings that I'm about to play to you here, the Department of Justice, the President of the United States, and Trump, the Trump Organization. Michael Cohen says he didn't give the recording or authorization for its use to Fox News or anyone. So he's claiming that the president and his cronies, Michael Cohen's words, not mine, violated his First Amendment rights. And now this, all to discredit him and the book What's Next. So let's play this. This is a conversation where Cuomo is talking to Michael Cohen about some allegations that have come up about him and his time at ABC. And he's outraged by it because he says that they're not true.
You know, I'm always careful when I talk to media, you know?
Right.
Do you know how many phone calls I've gotten from people at ABC who say that reporters are calling and lying about things they heard about me to try to get stories about me when I was at ABC? Guys calling and saying, I heard he was the Charlie Rose of ABC, used to invite women to the hotel and open his bathroom. Do I look like the kind of guy who's got to do that?
Sure, why not?
But you're insane. So, lying, so I already have a good...
Stop the tape there. I love that part there because you got to rewind a little bit. Cuomo asked him that question. Do I seem, look at me, man. I built, and one of the things that's kind of funny about this is when Tucker played this last night on Fox, he was showing all these videos of Cuomo pumping up and working out and stuff like that. But so he asked, Dave, cue it up to the part where he asked Cuomo, do I look like the kind of guy, the kind of effing guy who's got to do that?
Do I look like the kind of guy who's got to do that?
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not?
So I already have a good source that says that he forced one woman to have sex. I just want to know if you've ever heard anything like that. There is no woman.
Right.
There is none of that.
So here's the problem.
Women who do work there saying, oh, yeah, you know, some of these men, and naming me with other guys, you know, we bumped into each other once in the elevator, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he made me really uncomfortable. I mean, what the f***?
It's a problem, and now you.
So I'm careful with the media always.
Right.
I've always told you the media is not your friend.
No,
that's my favorite part right there. The media is not your friend. Well, Chris Cuomo, we know that. We know that CNN is certainly not your friend. The media is not your friend, And I used to criticize the president when he would say the media is the enemy of the people, but I think there's ample evidence. I'll give you another exhibit here in just a moment. Now, I do think that there should be some questions here about where that audio came from. Tucker Carlson never really said where it came from, but let's realize why this is important outside of being kind of salacious and things like that. It's sort of interesting, and, you know, Fredo is talking about women and whether or not he had done some inappropriate things with women. I don't know if he has. He sounds like maybe he's insisting that he didn't. But Chris Cuomo was very, very quick, as was the entire team at CNN, to buy into the Christine Blasey Ford claims with no evidence whatsoever. So isn't it interesting? I mean, there's hypocrisy that abounds everywhere, but Cuomo's a guy that actually says to Michael Cohen, the media is not your friend. Let me give you another exhibit here of the bias. So there was a panel discussion that involved, what happened to Nicole Wallace? My goodness, Nicole's been a guest on the show, and she seemed like she was somewhat sane, but I think she's kind of lost her marbles, and she got this gig now at MSNBC during the daytime. So she got a panel on, and one of the members of the panel is PBS NewsHour White House correspondent Yamiche Alcindor. So you have, this is a reporter. She's a straight news reporter. She's not a host of a show or anything like that. She's supposed to not be giving her opinions, I suppose. That's the way it used to be. By the way, did anyone watch WGN America last night and the non-biased 3 hours of news? I thought it was a little rough around the edges, but there were some things that I liked. I'm going to check it back here in about a week or two, because maybe I'll sample it a little, because I think they need to work out some of the kinks. And that was the one thing that certainly, you know, caught my attention last night. But anyway, the bottom line is that's something that they're trying to strive for, because they see so much bias in the news. So she's actually talking here with Nicole Wallace, and she addresses this issue with the 17-year-old kid, Kyle Rittenhouse, from Antioch, Illinois, who went up there and he shot several people, killed two people in Kenosha. So here's what she says here.
I think that what we're dealing with is the president really not wanting to lose any voters, and also wanting to not look like he's giving even an inch on the idea of law enforcement sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes unjustifiably killing African Americans. And he doesn't want to deal with the reality that black people are killed at higher rates than white people in this country. So what you see the president doing is just doubling down and really going to this part of his base. I don't think all Trump supporters are like this, but going to the part of his base that think that it's okay for a 17-year-old to shoot people in the street who are unarmed, who are at a protest, who are upset about the way that the federal government is treating African Americans.
Okay, let's stop it right there. She just discredited herself completely. She said, who are unarmed. Many of you might not have seen the videos, and maybe some of you think that this is outrageous what Kyle Rittenhouse did. Maybe there's going to be proof that is presented. See, here's what's dangerous. This is what I do. I did it with Mike Brown. I did it with George Floyd. I did it with Jacob Blake. I waited until there was more evidence. We have more evidence in all those cases now. Not all of it, but we have a lot more than we did when they happened, when LeBron James was making his call on what happened as uninformed. That guy, good Lord, unbelievable. Just people follow like he's preaching the gospel. But in this particular situation, she just said that these guys were unarmed. There's a picture of one of the guys with a pistol in his hand kneeling down. There's another pistol, or there's another guy, one of the guys that was shot, that is beating Rittenhouse or tries to take a swipe with a skateboard. So I don't know. Maybe there's information that will come out that shows that Kyle Rittenhouse decided in his bedroom in Antioch, Illinois, that he was going to go up and kill some protesters, that he's had enough. So far, there's no evidence like that. What we have is evidence. I'm not cheering on what happened. I think, can't you be a person in this country that takes a look at evidence and says, man, I wish that kid wouldn't have gone up there with that AR, and maybe he should have just stayed home. What the hell was he doing? The vigilante thing's going to get you in trouble. You can maybe say that, but I said this yesterday. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't think there's any doubt in anyone who looks at this objectively. If you look at the facts, if you look at what happened, if you look at the video, that he would most likely be in the ICU himself had he not shot these people. Or maybe not survived himself. So it's not an extreme example to make a case for self-defense in this case at all. In fact, it's pretty simple. These lawyers are not going to have too much of a tough time. And then, as we mentioned yesterday, you have, you know, a situation where there's going to be more rioting and looting. So who's to blame for that? Well, Yamiche Alcindor is. PBS is. PBS put a tweet out that said that the people were unarmed. That's not true. There's ample evidence, all kinds of evidence to show that that's not true. So they lied about what happened in Kenosha. They've, for the most part, lied about what happened with George Floyd. They've lied about what's happened with Brett Kavanaugh. They lied about what happened. They, as the media. I'm sorry, but it is. It's the New York Times, CNN, NPR. They lied about Covington Catholic, all these things. That's why they have no credibility anymore. And it's, you know, as a guy who went to journalism school, as a news director who cares about news and reporting and local journalism, it's sickening to see what's happened to, I can't even call it journalism in this country. 247. We're coming back with more next.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
We'll get some numbers in the next hour from the Pandemic Task Force. Also, CNET Editor-at-Large Ian Scher is going to join us on Apple and Google working together on a new COVID contact tracing app. How's that going to work, and will it be one of those creepy things that violates your privacy? We'll find out in the next hour here on KMOX. Right now, we had this story that came out earlier today. I even heard, I think, Tom promote this for the morning show tomorrow. We're going to beat him to the punch, though, because there's information on how to get season tickets for St. Louis City SC. Dennis Moore with us this afternoon, the Chief Revenue Officer for the team. Dennis, welcome to KMOX. Give us the details. A lot of people are interested in this. I think you're going to have little trouble selling tickets.
No, thanks, Mark. First, thanks for having me on. The details are that we will go live with our season ticket deposit campaign on Wednesday, September 16th at 10 a.m. It is the first step where we will really engage with our potential season ticket holders. So encourage our fans over the next 2 weeks to visit our website, stlcitysc.com, get all the information, and be prepared on the 16th to put down your deposit. Should be a huge amount of support, and we're excited to get going.
How much of a deposit are we being asked to put down?
We have four different levels of deposits, but for your general seats, we are $50 per account. For any premium seats, it's $100 per account. And you will have the opportunity, once you place that deposit, to select up to a maximum of 8 season tickets. But it is just one deposit. So as an example, if you want 4 reserved seats, you would place one deposit for $50, and then select that you intend to purchase 4 season tickets at a later date.
And is it a situation where you have, when you're making those deposits, you kind of indicate price point for the tickets as well and the area of the field, or is that not getting all specific right now?
It is not getting all specific right now. So obviously we've got a bit of a runway. We won't start play until March of 23. So we are not announcing season ticket prices at this point. We are merely activating our deposit campaign. And so really that's enabling people to start the experience. And for lack of a better term, people are getting their place in line. And at some point over the next 2 years, we will actually be in touch with everybody who's placed a deposit. And they'll have the opportunity to select exact season ticket locations at that time. And when we get to that point, we will, before anybody selects exact seats, they will know what our season ticket prices are at that point.
Dennis, here's what's great about this, and I said it when all this came together. I am not a soccer person, and my wife played collegiate soccer. This is a bit of a point of contention, but I'm so excited about this. I think it's so great from the city and for the area. I'm going to put a deposit down. I'd love to have season tickets, and I don't even like soccer that much just because I'm interested, and I think it's going to be so much fun. I mean, look, I can certainly get on board, but I do think that there are a lot of people like me that may not have been totally on board with, you know, with the beautiful game football, that are so excited about this, they're willing to go check it out.
No, I think that's exactly right. We've been blown away since we announced the brand a couple weeks ago. The community from all aspects, the business community, the soccer community, and as you point out, really just the even a casual fan of the sport are excited to get on board. It's a big thing for the city. We're excited for what this represents for. You know, as we've been saying, a spirit of a new St. Louis, and we're excited to begin our work to engage with our fans. And a lot of support from people that, you know, certainly plenty of soccer fans and a huge soccer community here. But it's so much more than that, and we're really excited to start our process moving forward.
Dennis Moore, the chief revenue officer for St. Louis SC. I almost said FC. I got to get practicing to SC. But all the details up on stlouisfc.com. Check it out. I think I'm right about that. Is it stlouisfc.com? See, I'm doing this wrong, right?
It is St. Louis City SC, as in soccerclub.com.
Yeah, none of what I said was accurate, but you cleared it up. Dennis, I appreciate it. 2:57, second hour of the show is coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.